And thank you everyone for coming to this lunchtime session. I'm Elisa Ghirardelli, and I have some additional contributors that have helped me work on this data. And those are Valerie Quinn, Sharon Sugarman, Mi Vang, and Bhavdeep Sachev. I don't have any relationships to disclose, and that's the third time I've had to say that. And I want to talk about a background. So why the retail food environment around schools is important, and what's been happening in the research around this area of interest. Recently, we had a report come out from Sue Babby from UCLA, and looking at food environments near home and school with a relationship to consumption of soda and fast food. And so that was a very interesting publication that just came out. You can get that at UCLA Center for Health Policy Research. Also, in 2009, Davis et al., they found links with fast food within a half mile of schools with a higher BMI and poor dietary behaviors. Simon et al. In 2008 had looked at the proximity of fast food restaurants to school and looked at neighborhood income. Roland Sturm did some great research published on that in 2007, looking at disparities between the food environment and U.S. middle and high schools. And then also Austin et al. Back in 2005 started to kind of look at the fast food restaurants around schools. The thing about some of these studies, though, is that we're looking often at just one or two or just minimal pieces of the full food environment. And so it really came to me that I felt like there were parts of it that weren't getting represented in some of these studies. So it's usually just looking at fast food or at grocery stores or convenience stores, but there's a lot of other databases that are restaurant databases and other things that I'll show you about in just a few minutes that I wanted to include as part of the food environment around schools. So also a little bit of background about California and where we are with our youth and overweight and obesity. This is our CalTeen survey, and it looks at it's a phone survey with California teens ages 12 to 17. And we're seeing some exciting things happen with some declines, and we're really anticipating the 2010 data, which we're busily analyzing right now, to see if we're going to actually get back down to 1998 levels. So a little bit about CX3 as well. The CX is for communities of excellence, and the 3 is for nutrition, physical activity, and obesity prevention. We're building off of a project called CX, which is a tobacco control, which looks at the tobacco environment. And we're really focusing on collecting data and documenting the physical environment to encourage local action, to change conditions, and support individual behaviors. We have a variety of obesity prevention benchmarks that are community indicators and assets that we then built the tools and methods out of to determine if those communities are meeting those indicators and assets. We really want to activate consumers and partners in local neighborhoods, and specifically in low-income neighborhoods, which is our target population, and then neighborhoods and around schools. So one part of this is that we train local health departments to use our network for Healthy California GIS map viewer, and they map the food environment in their county and take a look at what's there around schools and the neighborhood, and then determine which neighborhoods they want to go into to get a closer look at what's happening and actually get on the ground and survey. But we have on this network map viewer over 100 database layers. It's a very rich data source, and I've been tapping into it to look at it for other things and for these other data. And for also, we're going to train them to use this to really look at the totality of the food environment around schools, and I'll show you those layers. So we use Dun & Bradstreet retail data set, and some of the database layers that I've included in this analysis are grocery stores, convenience stores, fast food, so that's chain and non-chain, and restaurants. And I'll go into restaurants a little bit more because it's a bit of a squirrely layer. But also cafes, which are not included in fast food, ice cream shops, Jamba Juice, donut shops, and those other kinds of sources of food. So about the restaurant layer. We really wanted to include this layer because there are there are types of restaurants in there that are not included in the fast food layer, that are things like Chipotle, that are fast casual, like Panera Bread and those kinds of things. Also diners like IHOP and Denny's that we know youth actually are going to as well. The other thing that happened is we had to do a lot of cleaning of this layer, though, before we felt like it was youth appropriate. And we took out establishments that were in there by looking at their name. And you can see me, that's the disgruntled researcher, looking at this layer and saying, why in the heck do we have dentists, insurance providers, handymen, plumbers, roofers, jewelers, and attorneys in this layer? So we took all of those out, and we also removed catering services and personal chefs. So we made the layer a little more youth-oriented because we wanted to look around schools, and we're adding that layer, once it's gotten all this work done to it, to the GIS to be included in this analysis that the local health departments can do too. We took out alcohol-related establishments as well, things like bars, nightclubs, pubs, and taverns, using a name convention method to do that. But then we had to add back in juice bars and taco bars and noodle bars. The other thing we did to kind of work with this layer is we took out chains that had 20 or more locations, and by using what we kind of developed as a youth-oriented criteria. So if they served alcohol, if they had menu items that were above $10, at or above $10, and if it had sort of a sit-down or upscale appearance on the web. So we did a little bit of pulling out of some of these types of locations. But there are still things in this layer that will need to be looked at as well. So it's by no means perfect. So the data set that we have worked with to do this is, I'm calling the Retail Opportunities data set. We had close to 9,000 public schools from the California Department of Education geocoded in this data set. And about 12% of them had no retail food within a half mile. So we looked at a half mile buffer or a radius around each of these geocoded schools. And about 7,800 of them have retail food within a half mile. And this is the school sample. So most of them are elementary schools, and it's a split kind of between the junior. We put the junior and the middle schools, junior high and middle schools together, and high schools. Those are about split about the amount. And then the continuation high schools are just high schools that are continuation. So no adult education included there. So this is, just gives you an idea of kind of what we're looking at. So we are looking at a geocoded point for like a school, and then we look at what's inside of the buffer, the radius around the school, to look at the retail food opportunities. When we looked at everything together, all the retail types by school type, it looks like high schools have more of these retail food opportunities around them compared to the other types of schools. But we didn't find a whole lot of differences between the retail food types by school type. You still see that high schools have a little more than the other schools, and that the restaurant layer does dominate the types of retail food opportunities that we see here. So part of this, as I mentioned, is that we want to work with local health departments to help them identify which schools are of highest priority for interventions and local action. So we did some look at natural breaks to come up with what we're calling the retail food exposure scale. So the colors in here are kind of like green is go, you know, you don't have any retail food opportunities around, so you guys are doing okay. These are schools that are fine. There's no issues there. 1 to 2, you know, it's still not a big deal. But as you start to kind of go down the number of retail food opportunities, you see that some of these areas have 30 or more around them, and there were, I think, about 100 of them that had 100 or more around their schools. The one that's 677, that was kind of just one school that had a lot, and it was a very dense urban area in Orange County of California. So, but the next thing that we did became something very compelling to me. And we looked at these natural breaks by how many of these schools were in census tracts that qualified by income for WIC or the Supplemental Nutrition Assistance Program education. And what I found was very interesting. So as the number of retail food opportunities increase around the school, there are more of these schools that are in tracts that are low income. So you can see on the right-hand side here that the ones that have no retail food opportunities, there's not a lot of them that are ineligible, income-eligible census tracts. So the ones that have more retail food opportunities that are denser, more urban, and have a lot of these food locations around them are more likely to be low-income neighborhoods. So we're seeing a lot of disparity here. So I wanted to look at the top 10 worst high schools so that we can get kind of a first look at, you know, what are the worst case scenarios here as we start to dive into this data more. And 7 out of these 10 high schools were qualified as low income or very low income, and which is more than half the population at 185% of the federal poverty level or below using the 2005-2009 American Community Survey data. 2 of them were really close to meeting this criteria, so that leaves only 1 that was not a low-income school. And then we looked at some FitnessGram data for these schools, which FitnessGram is a fitness test that has 6 criteria on it. One of them is body composition, and they happen in each and every school in California, pretty much except for some of the charter schools. And it's actual weight and height that's measured. It's not 100% accurate, but it's pretty darn good because it is actual heights and weights. But they also do fitness criteria, so how, you know, what's their strength ratio, how is their endurance, and those kinds of things, and they have 6 criteria that they look at. 6 of these schools had measures that were not in the healthy fitness zone, that's what they call it, for not being healthy, for not being in their ranges of healthy fitness, for body composition compared to the state level. And 3 of them didn't have the FitnessGram data because they were charter schools. So this just gives you a view, some examples of some of these top worst high schools. And I'll tell you where these high schools are. This one is in Los Angeles. It's the California Academy for Liberal Studies. It had 324 retail food opportunities. It's in a very low-income neighborhood, which is the blue. You see the blue here? Those are the dark blue census tracts are where are all low-income qualifying census tracts. 82% of these students have free and reduced price meals, but we didn't get to see a FitnessGram for this school. This is another one in Los Angeles that's the Envision Academy for Arts and Technology. They had 290 retail food opportunities within a half mile. It's a small school, but it's in a very low-income neighborhood, and only 6 of the 105 students in the 9th grade met the 6 of 6 fitness criteria for FitnessGram. 67% of them are on free and reduced price meals. And here's another one. This one's in San Francisco. This is Mission High School. It has 238 retail food opportunities. It's not in a low-income census tract, but the dark blue ones that are right next to it are very low-income census tracts for non-Hispanic blacks. 58% of these students get free and reduced price meals, and only 21% of them met the 6 of 6 criteria for FitnessGram, and 29% of them are not in the healthy fitness zone for body composition. So we want to go beyond just looking at these worst-case scenarios to match up this FitnessGram data with all the schools and see what the distribution looks like, and that's one of our next steps. So implications. It's more evidence that there's a presence of retail food opportunities around schools, and it's a potential food opportunity for youth at these schools going to and from schools. It's kind of showing what they're up against. When they're going to and from school. It's important for developing meaningful, targeted nutrition education and media literacy I mean, think about all the messages and that they're exposed to around these retail food opportunities, including like the signage outside of the stores and the fast food restaurants and the sandwich boards that are in front of all of these locations. How do they interpret this, and how do they deal with knowing how to avoid these cues? It's also critical for understanding what they're up against, and it can inform partnerships and policies. And there's potentially the need for reducing retail food opportunities around these schools. We want to reduce the disparities between these lower-income communities that are really unfairly saturated with retail food. We want to urge the field to consider more than just fast food in isolation compared to the other retail food. So I think that we all should be looking at more than just fast food or more than just stores around schools to really look at the full scope of what's there. It also underscores the need for better quality data. A lot of these retail data sources are not accurate. We've seen a lot of the ground truthing studies that are not good. And I think that we should start doing some advocacy around trying to get better retail data. One idea that we've come up with is maybe trying to work with environmental health specialists who tend to have pretty good lists, but there's no standardized system for how they're actually recording what type of outlets and locations these places are or where they are. So the next steps for us, we are also working on what we're calling the school score. So this retail food exposure scale is just one part of what the health departments will do to examine what the schools look like. They will also be out looking around within that half-mile boundary at the retail food stores, actually going into them. If it's as much as some of these have, they'll do a sample. So they won't look at all of them, but they'll do a sample of them. They'll look at the fast food, the retail, the outdoor marketing within 1,000 feet, mobile vending within 500 feet, and walkability and safety. And then we're generating a score for them for those schools so that they can determine which schools are priority. We also want to really work with this database, the retail and school database, more, and take a look at the fitness gram. And that's it.